Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club for this morning. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Daniel Harper back with you after a little holiday for the last couple of weeks. And this chair has been ably filled in by the very great Adam White, who joins us again. Good morning to you, Whitey.
I tell you what, Daniel, a little bit of an issue.
What's happened?
Well, I decided I would actually sit in your seat for the 2 weeks you were away. We were describing it as a hiatus. Very much more spacious on your side of the bench compared to where.
I think it's your setup. Your setup's poor.
I think it's a congested situation. That's what it is. Anyway, it's good to have you back, and we thought we'd throw in some big names for you to have a chat to. You unfortunately missed out on having a chat to Andrew Bogut.
Yeah,
I know that's caused some consternation.
Been trying that for 6 weeks. Couldn't get hold of him.
He was really good.
I'm sure he was. He's fantastic,
he was really
big bogey.
But it's good to have you back.
Nice to be back, always, and plenty of action going on in the world of sport as well. Speaking of being back, one man who's been sunning himself silly looks fantastic. In fact, looks like he's been in a solarium for the last 6 weeks. Damien Fleming, yep. The biologist, is back. Morning, Flem.
Did both solarium and sun up there.
Did you?
No, it was beautiful. Port Douglas, probably go up there every second year. 26 degrees every day, sun, no rain, little bit of a breeze, couple of games of golf, chucking kids in the pool, having a few beers,
saw Bruce Dool.
Saw Bruce
Dool. The flying doormat.
So last night, I'm just walking, Wendy took the kids to see the groper, the world famous groper there.
What's the groper?
The groper, you go there on, I think it's 5 o'clock each night on the marina,
yeah.
And it just comes up to feed.
Oh, the big fish.
Yeah, the big fish. It didn't turn up, so the kids were disappointed. But I saw a big fish.
You saw the biggest fish.
So I was just walking by myself, and all of a sudden, you know, I don't really look at people as I'm walking past them. I just sensed a vibe of greatness, right? A vibe of greatness. And then it went all Matrix, you know, like everyone's going at fast speed and slow-mo. I look at the guy, it's Bruce Dool. And then I have to look again. And then I just feel like, do I say Dooley or g'day Bruce or well done, you're a legend. You know, I've just felt like a nuffy.
Was he still sporting the headband?
Didn't go headband, but hadn't receded much either. It had gone greyer, but I'd expected to be less hair there.
Yeah, right.
And then a holding pattern.
I got to the and then the wife's, you know, she's in the middle. I think she's trying to shield him away from nuffies like myself. And then got to the pub, tell everyone, they're going, oh, yeah, like the Loch Ness monster. Yeah, sure you saw him. And then just a movement, just a classy movement. I look again, and graceful. There's Dooley just running just past the pub.
Running?
Well, do you ever remember the way he used to run out of the back line?
Yeah.
Like, he never looked like he was rushing, went... It was like that again, probably running in for a beer.
Did he get
I'm not sure what it was.
Did he get a fist in?
And never saw him again. But finished. I saw him twice.
The ghost Bruce of Bruce Dool.
Are you sure it's him?
No, well, the second time, because I reckon there was like a 1982 Carlton Adidas tracksuit bottom. That's what gave it away for me. But it was just... Like, I could see a Hollywood star and all that. It wouldn't give me as much love as seeing Bruce Dool.
I don't know about you, Huff. I don't see Bruce Dool being a Port Douglas sort of guy.
No. Does he live there?
I do. The winter sojourn, the sun on the back situation. I reckon Bruce would love a bit of sun on his back.
But has he retired up there? That's my question.
Well, I don't know.
If so, I wouldn't mind a game of golf.
He used to own a news agency in Lower Plenty, I think it was, wasn't it? I think it was. So maybe he's just having a bit of a holiday from delivering papers at idiot o'clock.
And, like, obviously been a lifelong Hawthorn fan, and you know, a couple of favourites I'd have from other teams, Bruce Dool was one of them. It was Bruce Dool, Malcolm Blight, and Bernie Quinlan.
They were the three.
Of opposition three. Teams. Yeah.
Very good three.
Do you know what I mean? They had to be great players for you to like them.
That's a good three.
I think of Bruce Dool more as a sort of a Phillip Island sort of holiday man. Well, there's a Dramana, that sort of situation, not a Port Douglas.
If you're the flying doormat, you can go wherever you like, can't you? Just get some sun. You're not getting a lot of sun from Phillip Island this time of year.
Has he ever done an interview? Anyway. Has Dooley ever done an interview?
I don't know.
He's not big on the media circuit.
If I see him again in 2 years' time, do you want me to... Should we get him on or... Well, that was it for me. That was the highlight.
In a sanctum with
can we do
the flying doormat. That'd be good.
Well, maybe you could fill in for half. When half goes away, why?
Well, former Carlton legend replacing.
Well, that's right. That's right. Two former Carlton greats. Speaking of legends, Flem, you're one of those, and you came in this morning emulating, I imagine, one of your other heroes, Michael Jackson.
Can you? Yes.
You ride now. You ride to work.
Yep.
It's
getting a bit slower. I'm not going to lie to you.
And today you rock up with one glove, Michael Jackson style. What's going on?
My right hand is just thawing out now. You know, 4:45. I'm fumbling around for my beanie and all that. I don't want to put the light on to wake up my wife, Wendy. And I'm looking, I only got one glove. It is freezing out there.
It was fresh this morning.
Yeah. So it wasn't, I was more a Prince man over Michael Jackson, but both passed away. But the right arm hand is very, very cold.
Looks a bit blue over there.
So I'll shake my left hand BJ comes in.
We're looking forward to catching up with
you. Hey, how was your holiday?
Yeah, good. Nice place, Vietnam. Very nice place. What are these? A sweaty. It's a very sweaty place. And I thought of you often through the holiday, Whitey, funnily enough, because it was sweaty and because there was great food. And I thought, you're missing out. You are missing out. No, the fact that you don't want to be travelling to these areas of the world.
I have heard a rumour of an activity that took place over in Vietnam food situation.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the war. Jeez.
That's not a rumour. No, I don't think that was a rumour, Flem. I reckon that might have
happened.
Sorry,
Whitey.
It's eating in a blindfold scenario.
Oh, no. Well, no, this is one of the great
things.
In the
dark or something.
Yes. Pitch black. It's a restaurant over there. It's amazing concept that you eat in darkness.
It's
a restaurant.
It. Amazing.
The food was unbelievable, just by the way.
A lot of trust there.
Yeah, a lot of trust. But the people who serve you are blind.
Oh.
Or vision impaired, significantly vision impaired.
And so that's more trust.
More trust. So they get job opportunities, which is lovely, because over there there's not a lot of opportunities for blind people. So they get a chance to have a job and an employment, which is a fantastic concept. But the whole dining experience with no eyes, 70% of your senses is sight. So take that away, and you've got four left for 30%, and they
How
just
do they
go
break
through
up the
roof. 7.5, 7.5, it's pretty even. 7.5, 7.5.
Are you sure? You've just made that up.
Yes, I've just made
Can
that
you
up.
Look that up?
I'll Google it in a sec.
Amazing.
One of the most amazing experiences you'll ever eat, the senses just go through the roof, and it's unbelievable. If you get a chance to do it.
And how do they feed you?
On the table.
No, but are you doing it because you can't see?
Yeah, well, that's part of the thing. You're using a little bit of fork and hand sort of action, and you got little 11 dishes, three courses, 11 dishes, three little tubs. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
It is amazing. My little man, who's 10, wasn't overly comfortable with the situation early, but when the ice cream came out, life was all right.
Yeah.
But a very, very unique dining experience.
Yeah. I can't say the Flemings were that unique. My son, Braden, he had a chicken parmigiana every night. Nothing different.
Put on him.
I could go out for dinner with your son.
No different.
Yeah. Do you know
chicken
who,
parmigiana every night.
The only thing I'd mix up, I'd go from a Coke to a lemonade.
Do you know I reckon be a chicken parma every night sort of fellow? Bruce Dool.
Yeah.
Look at Bruce Dool
and
be a chicken parma.
Why wouldn't you go
sort of
to Port
fella?
Douglas?
Why wouldn't you
if
do
you
it?
If you paid me $2,000, I wouldn't do what you just did with that dinner.
You've got to extend yourself sometimes, Whitey.
Extend yourself. The only time I would potentially go down that path is if I was in a KFC restaurant. I'd blindfold myself there. I'd be pretty confident.
You just
I'd be happy with
it. Doesn't
what
count
I was
when you're thinking of a drumstick in your head.
That's the gravy potato option.
Yeah. No, one of the great experiences. You would love it.
Yeah, I'd like that. I'd give that a go.
Smith floats the ball. Cronk puts a kick across the ground and Valentine strikes again. Great Origin tries. Brilliant stuff.
It was a night full of great Origin tries from Queensland last night. Game 3 of Origin 2017, 22-6 was the final margin to the home team there at Suncorp Stadium. Queensland getting the chocolates after being 1-0 down in the best of three series and winning it 2-1. It was one of the most impressive performances I've seen from a rugby league team, full stop, let alone at Origin. They were clinical last night, Queensland. They were awesome, Flynn.
Rewind. Weren't they gone after game one?
Well, there's a lot of noise being made out of New South Wales.
Slater not playing. They're old. They made a record amount of changes for game two.
Yep.
And the Blues were home.
It was all over, wasn't it?
I was doing the back page, which is very pro-Blues.
Oh, yes, you would have been up there on Fox Sports, yes.
And even everyone behind the scenes, they were celebrating already.
Well, they were definitely gone, Flem, after game one and a half, because just pretty much just before half time in game two, it looked like it slipped away. There's something special
about the Maroons.
Yeah, it's this culture.
Is it because all the Storm boys play for them?
Well, we had the whole spine last night, and they were talking about that on the commentary with Munster, whose Origin debut was just one for the ages. He was taking the mickey out of New South Wales at one. He was just dancing all around them, just trying to say, catch me if you can, catch me if you can. He was awesome last night. Munster, Smith, Koronk, and Slater, the second time ever that the spine of a State of Origin team has been from the one club. So it basically was the Melbourne Storm driving the show. And Cameron Smith's first 20 minutes was unbelievable. He played 6, he played 7, he played 9, he played whatever the hell he wanted. And I have no doubt that was to just try and settle the nerves, settle the players from Queensland into a rhythm, to get them into a position where they could win that game last night.
King Wally and they suggested just did this, it. Didn't he, yesterday?
He did.
King Wally
he
said.
He did on the Breakfast Club.
Smithy will step up to the plate.
Yeah, it was. I think I agree with everything you just said, Half, but I think so much of it now has become mental. Yep. That I think Queensland know they've got New South Wales measure if they play anywhere near their best. And New South Wales knows that if Queensland plays near their best, they actually can't win.
Mm.
And, you know, there was even that moment in the second half where they got within 6. So it was 12-0 at halftime. They got 12-6. So it's only one converted try from level. But you just see with the body language, they didn't think they could win. And Queensland looked to be paddling. They were getting really tired. And then their leaders just stand up again. And then they get the miraculous passing from Munster, and it all changed again.
Speaking of passing, I think Gary Ablett Jr., Darren Jarman, think of all the great exponents of the drop punt and passing lace out to a teammate in AFL football. They would have been very, very comfortable watching Cooper Cronk get that one ball across field for the second try for Queensland.
That was
just awesome. Yeah. Flat 40-metre drop punt to a bloke on the sideline was just brilliant for Cooper Cronk.
You see, the thing I find with rugby league is, I reckon at times, archaic's probably not quite the right word, but they don't, in my view, look at other sports as a way of trying to improve their sport. So you think of AFL and what they do, and becomes almost soccer at times with the ways that they set up formation-wise and defensively. Yep. I'd still love to see a team try and change the way that they play the game by looking at incorporating other sports a little bit more, to try and be a little bit more revolutionary in the way they go about it to get an advantage over other teams.
Where do you reckon you could do it, though? I mean, it's a very different sort of sport. It's not 360. It's line against line. It's very a flat game, isn't it? It's not so much a three-dimensional game. It's a very flat game.
Well, Izzy Folau went through a period of taking hangers, and I happened to be at a New South Wales training where Danny Frawley was helping out the New South Wales defenders.
Well, try and punch the ball away. What would Spud doing there? He wouldn't have been taking hangers. He just would have fisted it away.
But it was interesting seeing the big rugby player or the league players having to go sideways a bit and jump. You know, they were not as comfortable. Whereas you put a ball in front of them, that they'd knock out an elephant to get it. But Spud was trying, take away Izzy's run up to jump and all that sort of stuff. So that really threw. But you know, that was one innovation that I saw, that the ability of Folau to take a hanger and then put it over the tie line. But then how does the opposition deal with that? Because it's unique. No one else was doing it in the game.
Well, they had one of those. New South Wales got their first try, Josh Dugan, doing that. It was actually a really good take, running with the flight of the ball front on, and ended up somehow with the ball in his hands and getting that first try, that 12-6 try you were talking about, Whitey, early in the second half. That's become a real good tactic and a really powerful tactic to get. But again, you're looking on the precision of the kicker to get the ball in the zone that you need to get it to, and then the skill of the player to be able to fly with the flight of the ball more often than not against an opponent coming the other way. That's a really difficult part of the game. But if you've got that athleticism, the Folau factor is different because he's just such a unique beast, isn't he, with his size and athleticism. There's not too many guys in rugby league, it seems. So maybe that's what you're talking about, Whitey, getting a real athlete, a real run and jumper in that sort of position on the ground.
I think it's more, so I see that the Melbourne Storm do have an advantage, and then the extension of that is Queensland because of their kicking skills. And I still think there are a lot of teams that don't kick the ball as well as they can. You know, you get the 40-20 advantage if you can kick the ball in a field situation to retain possession. But I even sometimes think if a team tried to score, say, three or four field goals early in the game, because you get 1 point for it only, so it's not like you get a lot, but you think about how many times you're 20 metres out straight in front.
Yeah.
That even if you were to try and kick a few field goals and unsettle the opposition as to, well, are they going to kick it or are they actually going to run it here? You know, maybe a bit more sort of variation in that sense. But anyway, just a consideration.
How would you be if you're New South Wales? Because I reckon you're right, Robert. It's a good point. You know that when Queensland play their best, you can't win. Or anywhere near the best, you can't win. And then a bloke like Jonathan Thurston, who's going to be an immortal, an all-time legend, doesn't play because his shoulder's cooked. And they unearth this Munster fella, who they've seen clearly at club level at the Melbourne Storm.
But how will he step up in an Origin?
But how's
game?
He going to be in Origin, yeah, in the decider? How's he going to be? Now, he got protected last night beautifully by Cam Smith, as I mentioned before, alluded to before, early. But then he just launched. And he must be sitting there in Laurie Daly's coaching box thinking, we just got rid of this, the other bloke, the superstar. And now this kid comes in and does what he does. I mean, they must be just thinking, how the hell do we get any sort of momentum in this competition?
Well, I think a lot of that goes down to culture that you can create. And, you know, we've talked about this with Hawthorn, that, you know, the premiership players are finishing up. But it was almost symbolic with Luke Hodge that he's sort of like, no, I'm ready to retire because I've got faith in that next generation that they're going to be okay because we've taught them. And I think that's a little bit the same with Queensland, that the likes of Cam Smith and Billy Slater, they've taught the next generation. So it's almost becomes their responsibility to make sure before they finish that they've taught all the fundamentals to that next generation so it can continue on. And it looks like with Queensland and potentially with Hawthorn, it's going down that track.
Well, they get rid of coaches as well. Laurie Daly, they're Gonski? Calling for his head. Well, he's not Gonski, but he's a legend himself. But
well, if you
there's pressure, isn't it?
It's the worst job in Australian sport at the moment, isn't it? New South Wales Origin coach, because they don't win any series. They've won one in whatever it is, or two in 15 years or something. So it's not a very successful position for New South Wales Origin in the last 15 years or so. I mean, how do you turn that around? When you've got the culture that you talk about, Whitey, with a team like Queensland and the way they're able to do it. But even the passing on from Meninga to Kevvy Walters. No. Kevvy's been a part of the structure and program for many years now. But handing over the reins, a seamless handover to a guy like Kevvy Walters who just picks up the baton and runs with it with this team. Now, you know, there's not too many in New South Wales who can put their hand up and say they're a Cameron Smith type on the field or a Thurston's type or Cronk type. On the field, I don't think they've got that sort of guy. James Maloney's probably he's a really good head out there for New South Wales.
He's shattered up.
I mean, he's been a really good series up until last night.
They don't seem to have the dynamism.
They don't, do they?
No, they don't.
They don't.
The best part of the, apart from the play, is just the commentary and it just how shattered they get.
It went very quiet there for about 20 minutes in the back end of the first half.
I know that there are conflict of interest everywhere in commentary around all sorts of sports, but it's just unusual when you see Peter Stirling, who's the play-by-play expert, and then at halftime the New South Wales players are coming into the rooms. And Peter Stirling's in the rooms already, patting them on the back, encouraging them, come on, come on. Like. And then, you know, Phil Gould at one point says, you know, unfortunately, New South Wales defence there wasn't very good. Yeah. And I'm thinking, hang on, this coverage is going to Queensland as well.
It's fantastic.
Anyway.
I have no doubt Queensland fans would have been wrapped with that sort of feedback from New South Wales commentators last night. It was a big win by the Queenslanders, by the Maroons, 22-6. And it wraps up another edition of Origin for another year. 2-1. To the mighty Maroons, they just keep finding a way to keep on winning. The Aussies got the chocolates against India in their pool match and did it okay too, did it very comfortably in the end. At least Perry is one person I wouldn't mind cloning from an athletic perspective. She's a superstar. She had a big hand in last night's performance as well for the Australian women's cricket team, and she's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning to you, Elise. Congratulations.
Morning, Daniel.
Great to have you on board. Well done last night, because it was a big game for you. Both teams coming into that game 4-1, and positioning for the all-important semis was crucial last night. What was the attack coming into the game?
After an important match today, especially given the result of our last game against England where we didn't quite get over the line. So, pretty aware that today's match and the last full match on Saturday were really important in terms of qualified for the semis, but also, you know, being in a really good position heading into the semis as well. So it was nice to play well today and have a pretty comfortable win in the end, which is great.
Just on that loss to England, we don't like to lose any time, but particularly to England in Cricket World Cups, at least, as you well know. What was the discussion after that about the way the team performed and how you could improve on that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of positives in the game, but probably a big one for us is we just let ourselves down at probably crucial points in time and didn't quite play to the standard that we'd like to. So, and England played really well. It was a great match, and I think we did reasonably well to hang in as long as we did. But, we bowled a bucket load of extras, which really cost us in the field, and then we just never quite got going with the bat. So it was really nice today to sort of have a chance to rectify that. And we had a few good chats during the week leading up to that to make sure that we came out and just fixed those things up. And in a lot of ways, it was probably a really good match for us to have against England and just highlight a few things and give us a little bit of a kick up the butt, I guess, leading into the more crucial stage of the tournament.
Hey, Lise, Meg won the toss and sent India in. Was that because of the way the pitch looked? And do you think that'll be the way, the tactic for the rest of the tournament?
Good question. I think it's probably a bit of a case-by-case situation. We've been playing a few games in Bristol where we played against India, but we're playing on a fresh wicket. We just weren't sure what it was going to be like. And I think, in the end, it was probably really good that we saw India bat on at first because it was a fair bit different to the other wickets that we played on in Bristol. It was quite low and slow and turned a fair bit. So it was kind of nice to see that and then be able to adjust the way that we approached our batting innings. But, I think the way that probably limited overs cricket is at the moment, a lot of teams are now choosing to bowl first because they're just not sure of the total that they're capable of putting on the board, or it just seems to be a bit easier to chase things. So, it'd be interesting to see going forward.
I think it was about the 30th over, India were about 1 for 104, so there was a bit going on at that moment. Were you comfortable with what you were able to restrict them to in the end?
I think so. Sometimes those lower 200 scores can be quite tricky chases. I think with the pitch today, it was just turning a little bit and quite slow. It was always going to be tricky, but I think once you can get batters set and in, it makes things a lot easier. And we're sort of fortunate to have some really decent partnerships throughout our innings. And I think when you do that and you're able to get comfortable, a score like that normally, quite chaseable. So, it was really great that we were able to do that and sort of finish it the way that we did.
Well, you finished it beautifully. You talked about the partnerships. The opening partnership for the Aussies was fantastic. 62 with Nicole Bolton and Beth Mooney. Meg Lanning comes to the crease. She ends up 76 not out. But Elise, I mean, your average at the moment, the Cricket World Cup, is 104. 60 not out for you last night. You're in stellar form. Is it the best you've batted for a long time?
I'm not sure. I mean,
Elise, your average 104.
To be honest, I think, at various times during the tournament, I've probably been a little bit slow in innings, and the other night against England, it probably cost us in the end. So it's certainly been really nice to have some time out the middle, and I love that, and it's been great to bat out there with Meg today and other people during the tournament. But it was nice to be just a bit quicker today and get things going. And I think our biggest test is still to come, and that's when everyone wants to play well. I guess in the semi-finals and hopefully the finals. So, it's been nice, but it probably counts for nothing at this stage until, potentially we win the competition.
You've still got the one pool match left against South Africa. What were you going to do out of that game? Are you going to go into it unchanged? Will you potentially give a few girls a game they haven't played so far?
I think the likelihood at this stage is that we'll potentially play South Africa in the semi. So from that point of view, it's always important to, I guess, stamp your authority as best you can in any match you play, especially if we play them back-to-back. They're a really aggressive attacking side. They've got some world-class players in there with both bat and ball. And I think from our point of view, it'd just be really great in terms of building momentum to play some good cricket and play the style and in the manner that we want to play heading into the semi.
Good morning, BJ.
Morning, Half.
You guys had a big challenge on the weekend against the Pies, and you're emphatic. And midway through that second term, I was watching this overseas. You dominated the game.
You're overseas, were you?
I was, yeah. I was watching the game overseas in Vietnam. I was watching the game.
Yeah, nice.
You sound surprised by that.
You don't look tanned.
No, look at me. Yeah. I open the fridge and get burnt.
I can't talk from that front.
Yeah, it's same, mate.
I do change colour a little bit.
But I was watching a bit of this clash, and you were in full control early in the game. Were you expecting it to be that comfortable, or did you just play really well?
I think we or I expected us to respond based on the last couple of weeks and our performance against Brisbane. So, I don't know, you can't really predict going into the game of how it's going to pan out. You can obviously plan for it and hope for it, but we felt like we were in control most of the game. And we had a good feel for how they wanted to play or were going to try and play. So, it's fair to say that the things we worked on and planned for came to fruition and kind of worked out for us. But I think from a personal level, I did feel like we always had them at arm's length. And they did come back and challenge in the third quarter. I think they kicked three, maybe four in a row.
Yep.
And responded. So it was important that we did respond after that, which we gained the momentum back or stopped the momentum, which we struggled with throughout the year at different stages. With an opposition have got a run on, they managed to kick five or six. So we kept them to three or four. And then, going into the fourth quarter, we started really well and essentially put the nail in the coffin at the start of the quarter.
You've talked about responding a bit from the previous couple of weeks and then during the game as well. The previous couple of weeks, I'm interested to flesh out with you because there'd been a bit of momentum up until the break and just after the bye for the Bombers. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks falls and it disappears really quickly. Were you able to identify what areas sort of fell away in that time?
We reviewed the games pretty heavily, as you'd expect. I was here during the week of the Sydney game, and then the Brisbane loss. So I reviewed both of those games, in particular the Sydney one, but Brisbane, it was really important that we reviewed that really heavily as well. So we kept in mind too that a lot of guys haven't been in those situations in tight games, and particularly in the last quarters, we weren't really in that position last year. So there's a lot of guys that that's kind of new to them. Mm. So we identified where those positions were in a bit of a learning pit. It's important to really analyse them deeply and learn from them, because it will hold you in good stead moving forward in the future when you do get in those positions again. So. It was unfortunate we went down the way we did, particularly against Brisbane, but it was really important for our learning to do that.
Well, there were scenarios at play through the Brisbane game, and of course that last couple of minutes against Sydney that came into effect. Were you comfortable that you're playing well enough to continue the momentum, should be able to get those areas right?
After the Brisbane game?
Yeah,
we felt like we were playing good footy. Brisbane was a little bit different, maybe a bit of complacency. Hep talked about a bit of selfish football.
Yep.
So that was probably more concerning than the Sydney loss and the way it kind of happened and panned out. We did review Brisbane pretty heavily. So we're always confident that we're playing reasonable footy, and the Brisbane game in particular was a bit of a lull or a speed hump. Mm. And we were pretty confident we could respond. That's why I said earlier that we probably expected us, and we expected us to respond the way we did against Collingwood.
We've spoken about it a bit this year, BJ, about the difference between playing the game and winning the game. And it's almost like, and you've said this a few times, you've got to get yourselves into those positions a few times and actually learn from the ramifications. So that sting against Brisbane, could it almost be a positive in the end, that to get them hurting and understanding the importance of what it means to win and loss in a season where you've got a chance to play finals?
Yeah, and we don't really talk about it, the wins and losses. I think we know deep down that it may come back to haunt us, but it's important that you really bottle what you're thinking even going into the game, and your mindset and your mental preparation going into the game. Because for me, they're the nervous ones. They're the hard ones to win, because Brisbane are going well, don't get me wrong, but there's the high expectation, particularly externally, that we're expected to win and win comfortably. And I know guys consciously don't think that, but it might creep into their mind at different stages, and then it kind of... I think the game against Brisbane kind of reflected that we're kind of expected to win, and I didn't feel comfortable during that game at all, because we didn't feel like, well, one, we were playing well, and Brisbane were up and about. They were playing well. So there's big learnings in that, in terms of just your mental preparation, your mindset going into games. It shouldn't change, because it's with younger teams, it's almost easier to get up for against bigger teams, because you know what to expect and you know what's coming, and you know that if you don't bring the effort and that intensity that you are going to be embarrassed. And then there's almost against a weaker opposition, there's almost like, oh, maybe we can scrape through with an easy win and get through with an effort that's only, you know, half required kind of thing. So that's why sometimes those are the hardest to win. But I think it comes down to mental prep and your mindset. So that was the biggest learning out of the Brisbane game.
Well, you'll be up for this game, BJ. Your 100th game for Essendon.
Yeah, so I've been reminded.
Against your old team.
The Billy Cup, apparently.
The Billy Cup.
A few of the boys named it at the footy club. Well, Billy's now obviously got a choice between Essendon and St Kilda.
Of course, there you go.
AFLW. Yes. Okay. So, and the second one, obviously pending. So, yeah, the Billy Cup, a few of the boys have named it.
But how good were they last week against the Tigers? So, you're talking about getting up for games, but also good playing teams ahead of you. Beat them and you can stalk them. And Essendon got a nice percentage for a team that's lost more games than they've won.
And Saints, I think, are two games ahead of us.
Two ahead.
Yeah, two
Same
ahead.
Percentage.
Same percentage. So they're nearly in that bracket, just outside of us. So pretty easy to get up for Friday night footy, and me personally against my old team. But even though I don't know a lot of the guys that are there at the minute. But, easy to get up for. But, pretty important game for both footy clubs, you could say.
After playing as many games as you have, to play a Friday night game, does that still give you the buzz it once did?
Yeah, it's been few and far between the last couple of years, haven't they? So I think it's our second this year and last.
Yeah.
You'd probably know better.
Yeah, and I don't think you had one last year.
Yeah, I don't think we did. So, definitely. And we all talk about the best time slot to play in is Friday, get the game out of the way, have the whole weekend, Saturday, Sunday off, bit of recovery Saturday and Sunday, but essentially the weekend off. So, always a buzz around. Under the roof at Etihad's always a comforting thing.
So what's the biggest buzz you get? Is it knowing the television audience is big, everything's magnified, whatever happens on Friday night?
Yeah, well, Friday night
spoken
games,
about on the Saturday and away you go sort of thing.
Yeah, predominantly two bigger clubs playing or highly what am I trying to say? The ladder positions kind of dictate Friday night footy, so they're always big games in a sense because all their big rivalries, two big clubs. So there's always that feeling about it. But yeah, I think going back, I used to think about Friday night footy, we're the only ones playing, everyone's watching, and all that kind of thing. Now, but I don't think like that anymore. But there's just always a good feeling about it because there's a sense of there's bit of importance to it because of the situation. It's Friday night footy, so.
Well, there is importance from a ladder positioning perspective.
More so this week, too.
This week, 7v10, and they've got two games on you. You can close that back to one. All of a sudden, that congestion mid-table for those last couple of spots in the eight, BJ, certainly up for grabs. So, considering the way they started their game against Richmond last week and saying it's the most clinical performance they've seen from a team that Eddie had for years, and the importance of this game for you guys, you have to be on your mettle. It's going to be gang on at the start, you'd reckon.
Yeah, I think all the guys are well aware of the situation and well aware of how well St Kilda played last week. So it's going to be a bit of an arm wrestle at the start. And everyone knows the situation. So it's there in front of us, and in particular in the ladder position. But it's important that we obviously try and put that aside and concentrate on what we can control. And it's going to be a tough ask based on the footy the Saints have played, not only last week, but they've had a really solid 3 weeks and a good month of footy.
You've seen Luke Hodge. Well, you certainly have. If you watch footy in the last 15 years, he's been a superstar for the Hawthorn Football Club. And this week, the former captain plays game number 300, a four-time premiership hero, two-time Norm Smith, two-time best and fairest, a legend of the game. He's been good enough to join us in a very, very busy week for him. Hodgie, good morning.
Morning, Half. G'day, guys.
Great to have you on board, mate. A busy week, I'm sure. Congratulations on the announcement of the impending retirement at the end of the season. It was well-timed, I reckon, as you said on the other day, Tuesday, whatever it was, or Monday, Hodgie, that you're not one for talking in front of people too often, so it was better to get these press conferences out of the way and all in one hit. How long had you been discussing this with Clarko and the family?
We sort of, when we signed on last year, we knew if everything went well, that this would probably more than likely be my last year. But, you know, it's like half when you're sort of playing footy and you're enjoying it, you're still getting a kick, you sort of want to play on as long as you can. But I think the last month really sort of made me decide that our younger group of guys that are coming through, what they've done the last month. We went over to Adelaide, beat Adelaide over there when they're on top of the ladder. We beat GWS. We drew GWS when they're on top of the ladder. And a lot of it comes from the excitement of the young guys in our side. So I had a serious think and thought that if I did play on, I thought I'd be more than capable of playing on for next year, but I don't think it'd be the best thing for the footy club with how these younger guys have developed while they've played senior football.
So had that not happened, had those games against Adelaide and the Giants not eventuated as they did, would you more likely than not have continued to play?
I probably would have made the decision a little bit tougher. As I said, I feel like I'm still playing okay. Mentally, I'm still loving the game. And I think a lot of that is because of the younger guys that we've sort of played with. We've gone from a win at all costs, which has been the last 6 or 7 years, to this year understanding what situation we're in and trying to develop and get games into the younger guys the best we can. So I reckon it still probably would have been the same decision, but the last month has definitely made a lot clearer for me.
Luke, Damien Fleming here, big fan of your work over 15, 16 years. Have you had any time to reflect on your career this week, or do you think it'll be something you do later from that slightly chubby fella that went number one? And what were your expectations even back then?
As far as reflecting, I've tried to stay a little bit off social media. From what I've heard from family and friends, there's been a bit going on from the footy club and other people, which has been good to hear, but I'll probably watch that more after the game or at the end of the season. Because from all reports, there's been some funny things go over Twitter, a little bit from half yourself and also Dicko.
Dicko's been active.
How fat I was as a little kid. I think
there are some positives too.
What's that?
Like your top 299 games.
Well, no, the positives didn't get sent through to me. It was all the and all the funny stuff. But I think as a kid, you just want to play football, and I think, you just want to get to a footy club, try and get a game, and it's all about playing football when you're a younger kid. I think it's when you develop a little bit more and get a bit older, it's all about the team and team success. But early on was just playing football at MCG, which I dreamt of doing since I was a kid.
Would you have done anything differently, looking back as the number one draft pick, living through that and all the hype that surrounded that, of course, and the super draft with Juddy and Ball as well? Would you have handled anything differently, Hodgie?
I think there's a lot of things you go through life and you say, I wish I didn't do that. But I think the biggest thing in life is you've got to learn from your mistakes. And I've made plenty. I think I said on Monday it would be a pretty boring life or a pretty boring footy career if you've never made a mistake. So would I change things? First of all, did I wish I didn't do a few things? Yeah, sure. But would I change them? Probably not, because of a lot of the things where I've made mistakes have been life lessons that I've learned from.
And, Hodgie, so two Norm Smith medals, and you voted in the other two premierships for the Hawks. I mean, and they say what a great finals players you were. You know, why could you get yourself up? And not only that, the expectation of performing on the last day in September.
I think if you look across our four victories, it's not one person who stands out. There's been 8 or 10 blokes that have been outstanding. I think in 2008, there could have been 3 or 4 boys that have won it. And in 2014, I think Mitch and Louis and Ruffy kicked 5 as well, that all stood up. But I think it's more the attitude from what Clark has pushed through to the guys is you play your role, and you share your role throughout the game. So whether flick through halfback or midfield, everyone gets a go. So I think just on those days, I was lucky enough to sort of be in the right spot at the right time, and we're able to get some success.
Half, I want to ask you a question, because you were at Hawthorn when Luke first arrived.
Was
there a moment or an incident or something when you realised, this guy's going to be a really good player? I know he's a number one draft pick, but when you thought, there's something a bit special, was there a moment?
There was a couple of moments. One of them that stands out for me, and I don't embarrass Hodgie, he probably won't be anyway because he knows he's awesome. it was a training sort of scratch match type situation, and he just barreled through this contest at half back, and he's just a kid. A well-built kid and very confident kid with his ability, but he barreled through this contest and took out two blows, picked up a ball and hit someone lace out. And it was an innocuous little scratch match on a Thursday night or Tuesday night, whatever it was. And I thought, bloody hell, I mean, that's really good. And we'd heard about Hodgie. We didn't have obviously seen players in under 18. The coverage wasn't like it is these days. But we'd heard about this physical beast and this highly skillful left footer. And it was that one moment where it all came together for me to see it. And thought, bloody hell, that's something we're going to see time and time again. And that was the moment I saw you first time for the Hodgie and thought, maybe this is something for the footy club to build around. I didn't know it was going to be as extensive and as elaborate as it's been, because you have been a guy that has been able to carry the club on his shoulders through a difficult period with help, of course, but leading from the front as you had. Was it always something you wanted to do, lead the footy club?
I guess when you play football, I've always been pretty vocal out in the footy field, and I guess a strength of mine has been able to understand and read the game. I guess the area that I probably needed to, if I wanted to lead the footy club, was professionalism side of things. I remember when I was in my first or second year half, might have been first year, that we might have had a few drinks in the off-season, a few of the younger guys, and I did some weights with you.
Yes.
And as an older senior guy, dude looked after me. I think I did a bench press, and you said, mate, go across and have a banana and a Gatorade. Your breast smells of alcohol. I think from then was when you realised what team footy was all about, blokes looking after one another. But I think that was the side that I really had to improve on as far as leading. Because on field, I thought I matured reasonably fast, but it was the professional side of things where I think it took me a long time. Because when I got drafted, as you sort of said before, I was a raw 17-year-old kid. Loved playing football, but everything else was about hanging out with mates and having a good time and having fun. So it took me a long time to pick up on that side of things before I could really decide to leave the club.
And Hodgie, what about the relationship with Alistair Clarkson? He's been there through all the highs, took over the club, when they got an influx because they were near the bottom of the ladder of Buddy and Ruffy and Jordan Lewis there. Can you talk about his influence on the field for yourself and the club, but then obviously off the field as well?
Yeah, I think when he first got appointed as coach, he had a clear understanding of how he wanted the club to go. I think we had a few older guys at that stage, so he wanted to get in a new bunch of kids and teach them from the get-go and sort of teach them his way. And a few things, obviously, it took a few years to get there, but all of a sudden we all clicked at the one time with a bit of maturity and obviously hit 2008 with a bit of success. But one thing with Clarko, as far as his attitude on field playing-wise, is he leaves no stone unturned. He'll walk away after 13, 14, 15, after winning the premiership those years. He always came back with ways to get better, because I think he learned from after 08 that we stuck with a game plan. It didn't sort of stick true in 2009. So he always wanted to get better, always wanted to learn and see if there was ways that we as a football club could get better. As far as off-field, he's done a lot of leadership stuff, so he's really good at sort of sitting down with you, sort of hitting your emotional side of things, which gets you drawn in. But he loves to tell stories of his life and where he's learned, where he's learned life lessons to try and pass on to his players, which I guess as a coach, him opening up like that, is something where you hear all the players sort of bond with him and respect him so much.
And what about when he's doing the leading the circle, the karaoke circle? He's got the guitar out. did you ever think that was going to be his scene, the karaoke circle?
No, I didn't think so. But it's funny how boys talk about it and they sort of say, "Oh, here he goes with the guitar." But it's actually it's one of the best things, because it brings the boys together, whether you have a laugh with him or at him. I think it all started from when he got Cook in 2014. They sort of said, you need to continue to learn stuff. And I think his release was guitar. And as much as the boys sort of laugh the way he plays, every time he's done it, he's got the boys singing, he's got the boys bonding. Without knowing it, as a player, you sort of sit back and next thing you look around and there's 28 guys, 30 guys sitting around singing, having a laugh, having a smile, bonding together.
Yeah.
And Clarko will do anything, I guess, take the mickey out of himself to make sure that he's got a group of guys that love playing with one another and love spending time together.
Hodge, do you reckon if the cricketers don't get together, we played in a Ricky Ponting charity game down at Launceston earlier year, Clarko opened the batting in for us, could he do a role for Australia?
No, we're definitely not batting. In a 2020 game, we were actually going to retire after the fourth ball.
Exactly.
When he was trying to block him, Wendy Wolfram. But as a specialist fielder, he took the best catches I've ever seen down there. So
I've got that on video, that one, Hodgie.
Yes, it was you do too, actually. It was an unbelievable catch. But as far as a batsman or a bowler, I wouldn't have thought. I think Mickey Martin was a bit better bowler than this one.
Big Maxi Gawn is back for them after a couple of weeks off with injury. And it's great to see him back out there doing great things. The D's were a top four team for 24 hours on the weekend. They're fifth at the moment. They've got a big game this week in Darwin, taking on the Adelaide Crows. And Big Maxi's been good enough to join us. Good morning, Max.
Morning, boys. Glad to be here.
Now, before we get onto the footy, what's your view on Bo Mertens? Is he going to win the premiership?
Yeah, so between me and you three and everyone that's listening, Bo Merdens, I managed to get a wager on him when he was at long odds to win the premiership. So I am keen on him to try and win it. Craig was in form yesterday, which hurts, but Bo seems to just have the magic touch at the moment, so I think he'll hold on.
Was there a Twitter incident with your new idol, Maxi?
Well, I've been tweeting at Bo Merdens for a long time, and he decided to finally reply and said he didn't realise that I'd been tweeting him. So he hadn't noticed one thing that I've been saying over the 6 years I've been following him. I was there for his first win.
Baby Bo.
He's let him down. He hasn't let him ride the wave with him. Maxie's been on the wave, and Bo didn't even know.
No.
Speaking of waves, the D's are on a bit of a wave at the moment, playing good footy, and even though it was hard fought last week against the Blues, who make plenty of teams battle, it was a very important win for your football club. What does it do for your season now? What does it allow you to do going into the last 7 weeks of the year?
Yeah, you're right. It was a very important win. It's much publicised. We had a lot of people out for that game, and we had Jesse also coming back for his first game, so it was pretty important for us to try and get the win. Carlton played some very good footy, and their numbers post-game with some of the guys that got over 30 touches was incredible, so they actually played some really good footy. But to hold on by, I think it was 8 points in the end with Louis kicking that goal off the siren is a credit to us, and it takes us forward. Now we've got nothing to lose up in Darwin against the Crows, which will be exciting.
And Maxi, you're in fifth position. Is there a feeling around the group that you deserve to be there, that you're now a good team?
Well, to be honest, not one person in our team has been in fifth before, apart from Jordan Lewis. So we're all quite excited. But we're actually fourth there for a little bit until Ford went and beat the Eagles. Look, we know that we played good footy. At the halfway point, we were 5-5 from 10. So we thought we'd played well, but in the end, we'd only won at 50%, which probably isn't a side that makes finals. So we knew we had to improve from there, and we have. We've made 4 from 5, which is obviously a lot better going, and we've got to keep going now.
You go to Darwin, and some people go in heat chambers, some clubs wear dark blue sweatbands when they play in Darwin, all sorts of things. Have you done anything different in the preparation? Because obviously it's been freezing down here in Melbourne to acclimatise for it.
Yeah, we've done 8 years in Darwin now, and the first 6 years we did do stuff differently. We did a lot of chamber work. We went up early and did main sessions there, and we didn't seem to acclimatise that well with all the work we're doing. And then last year we sort of stripped it right back and just went up there as a normal interstate trip, and we managed to get the points for the first time in a while. So we'll go off last year's method probably a bit more. Obviously, it's different. You've got to hydrate a little bit more. Once you'll be getting everyone in these squash board shorts, which would be good. But apart from that, it's just another go.
Maxi, have you found in your return that, like, Cruiser, for example, you just thought, I'm going to run everywhere, and they make your life a misery, and you're not easing you back into the AFL ranks?
Yeah, I've had an interesting return. I had the West Coast boys first up, who were both tall forwards rucking, so they sort of ran me around a little bit early on. So I was used to that, but then I had the natural ruckman Naismith and then Cruiser who can run. So it's been an interesting return. I probably haven't played my best footy, in fairness. The first two games, I probably didn't feel 100% in my hamstring, but the game against Cruiser, I actually felt pretty good. He ran me around and got me warmed up, which was good. But Cruiser's in seriously good form. He's probably matching it with probably Paddy Ryder as the two leading to the gig this year. So it was exciting to get out there and see what the best ruckmen in the AFL are doing and what I had to get back to my form.
And nobody wants to miss 10 weeks through the middle of a season, Maxi, at any stage. But do you reckon if you were able to string sort of the last 10 together, building into hopefully a finals campaign, that it might be a bit of a blessing for you?
Yeah, when I first went down with a hamstring injury, our fitness coach, David Misson, was there when Nick at St Kilda when Nick Riewoldt did his, and he told me that Nick Riewoldt came back at about round 17 and he got best finals player for St Kilda that year. And Josh Gibson, when he did his hamstring tendon as well, he also got best finals player at Hawthorn the year he did it. So it gave me a bit of confidence that I can get back and get back into some form, and maybe having 10 weeks off is a blessing in disguise at times as well. So
At the moment, I'm not in unbelievable touch, but hopefully I can get there by the end of the year.
Scotty?
Yes.
Dominating proceedings. Will Jagger play again? This season?
I think they're keen. I think it's more a confidence, mental thing. Getting back, even if it's VFL, just have him play football for 2 or 3 weeks. Not pull up sore, then have a minor break, and then obviously he's going to have one of those long pre-seasons, but he's already a very fit unit. But I think they're desperate for him, just for the kid's sake. Just play footy. Because just come back, you know, will we play finals? Well, probably not, but just get back and play footy. Just for yourself. I think that's what they all want.
So, but that's fine from a mental perspective, but physically, will he be able to?
Oh, look, they won't take risks, but they clearly think he's closer. He's training, my understanding, so he's going to step that up in the next few weeks. I know we're running out of time.
No, there's plenty of time.
What are we in, July? There's only a month.
Plenty of time.
6 weeks.
8 games left?
Must be 7, isn't there?
Well, they're in a bit of a quandary at the moment, Hawthorn, because I think 4 or 5 weeks ago they thought, well, we're not going to play finals, so we'll start to put guys out into pasture. And Isaac Smith was kind of talking about this yesterday, but now all of a sudden there's a bit of a flicker. I don't think Stratton will play again this year. I don't think Rioli will play again this year.
Grant Birchall?
Birchall's another one.
Gibson?
Gibson's probably...
Well, Gibbo needs to come back to say goodbye.
Right.
Well, that's right.
And what better way to do that in a grand final?
Yeah. Good time to do it.
Now they're thinking, maybe we shouldn't quite put them in the pasture just yet.
Definitely.
Depending on what happens over the next couple
of
weeks.
They've been good, the Hawkeys.
They've been very exciting. I'd be happy to be a Hawthorn supporter.
Well, you could not be in recent years.
Yeah, correct.
And the regeneration of what we've seen in the last 10 weeks is highlighted in your paper today, last 4 weeks, is highlighted by Sammy Landsberger today.
I like that.
It's a credit to Clarkson to show how he can do it and other clubs just can't do it. Do you know what I mean? He's able to do it. I know he's surrounded by Hodge and they've learnt the right way, but it just shows if you learn the right way and you sit there, don't get a game for 2 or 3 years, then you get in there, you know what to do.
And he changes game plans, isn't it? They're definitely playing a bit different than they were at the start of the year.
Yeah,
they didn't know what the group was going to be.
No, it's impressive. Now, Patrick Cripps, one of your other clubs, he's a very tough unit.
He's a very tough unit.
Broken ribs, broken jaw, and now broken leg finally gets him.
Got some fragile bones. They need some more milk. Right. Need some more dairy intake.
It's a bit of a theme.
That'll be a week.
Patrick Danger.
I'm astounded by that.
That he's actually missing a game.
What a young legend he is.
But Patrick Dangerfield played through broken ribs. Nath Fyth has played through these guns.
Sternum.
And Dangerfield told me, he said, well, they don't improve, so if you sit out, you can sit out for 6 weeks and they
don't get better.
Or you just put a bit of padding in, you're going to get hit, as long as you don't get a really bad hit. And this is what these guys are doing. And, yeah, they drop a couple of percent, but you hardly notice. But they just play hurt.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Stars. He's an absolute star, Paddy Cripps.
But that hurts Carlton. That's massive for them.
Mm. Yep.
That four-man midfield they had, which is all Jets, take one out. Makes it a whole lot harder.
We were just talking about that before with Brendan Goddard, that I think was off air, that the Blues have got all these Rising Star nominations, which is fantastic, and it's 5 for the year, and you're seeing a snapshot to the future. But what is happening with Carlton is all their old players are playing really, really well every week. Yeah. And it makes it a lot easier for them to be competitive against good teams because their output is so good and so consistent.
Well, I can always just spike a few from GWS. Surely there's a few left that Soss can get his hands on.
Oh, well,
Scotty?
Jacob Hopper seems to be the... Kelly's obviously in the mix for everyone, but Hopper's the one that seems to be going to fall out that tree. And he's probably get a nice extra couple of hundred on a contract, I think.
Right,
but there's a lot of clubs into him. It's one of those ones.
And Flem, for you, before we leave and hand over to Blue Eyes, the Cricket Australia ACA stoush that's going on, David Peaver overnight's come out and been fairly strong again, the chairman of Cricket Australia, Whitey.
Yeah, well, before Flem comments, I want to put these to you. This is David Peaver. The suggestion that Cricket Australia's push to modify the player payments model has nothing to do with genuine issues facing the game is an insult to everyone involved at CA, including other members of the board. He then goes on to say, even worse, it disrespects all those from across the cricket community who have flooded CA, and me personally, with messages of support because they see firsthand the chronic underfunding of the game at grassroots level, in particular junior cricket. So that's an absolute whack at the ACA.
Doesn't sound conciliatory.
No, but I just think, does that help get the deal done?
He's peeved.
I don't care about the individuals. I just want the deal done. Get it done.
We know, we believe James Sutherland himself, the CEO, has been face to face with Alison Nicholson in recent times, which is
more my concern is on the boards is how if one wins, how the other one tries to get a win out of it.
Well, you've got to.
Do you know what I mean? You can't, because they're that far apart, or they have been. There's only a winner and a loser. The skill will be how it can look like a win-win. Get it done.
Oh, he stormed out.
The mic.
It's like a mic drop sort of stuff there from Damien Fleming. And that's a nice way to end the program. That was the best of The Breakfast Club from this morning. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.